So this is the last Wednesday evening talk I'll give here. So there's I can taste the bittersweet flavor. The flavor of impermanence. And this flavor of impermanence is heightened these days by living in the midst of a world pandemic where the future is unknown. Of course, it's always unknown, but the feeling or perception of the unknownness is heightened these days. And a feeling of impermanence also heightened by just contemplating birth and death and remembering that many people are dying around us, as they always have been, and we're going to die. Everything is unknown, uncertain, always changing. And we often wonder how to respond in such an unknown situation as human life, respond to the suffering of ourselves and others. We might feel ourselves to be in a dilemma, not knowing how to respond to the cries of the world, including ourselves. An old Zen story comes to mind about such a dilemma. Story called Xian Yan's Up in a Tree. We're all always up in a tree in a dilemma. So this ancient Chinese ancestor, Xian Yan, posed the dilemma like this. You're up in a tree. You and I are up in a tall tree. And we're hanging from a branch by our teeth. And our hands and feet are tied, so we can't touch any branch apart from this one gripped between our teeth. And someone appears beneath the tree and asks, what's the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? We might think that's a strange question to ask someone hanging from a tree by their teeth. But in the old days, it was a common question that people asked in Zen circles. And my understanding is that the question means, how will you compassionately respond to me and my difficult situation right now? Yeah, the question doesn't sound like that in a literal way, but I think that's the meaning of what's the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? What's the meaning of the Zen founders coming to benefit beings? What is the root of this whole Zen thing that we're doing? What's the point of all this anyway? How will we benefit beings? And I think the one who's asking is usually one who's has something to resolve. That's how I'm hearing the question anyway today. What's the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West? It's like, I have some suffering in my life. Please respond. I'm asking for your response. This questioner appears beneath the tree that you and I are hanging from by our teeth and asks, how will you respond to me? If you don't answer, you're avoiding a compassionate response. And if you do open your mouth and answer, you lose your life. You'll plummet from a tall tree to your death. So what do you do? That's Xian Yan's question to us. Such questions are most useful when we remember that these stories apply to us. You and I are up in a tree. We're always up in a tree, really, but some of us might feel it more these days. I feel like myself, apart from the from this pandemic, that I'm leaving my life as I know it for the past 10 years, for the past 30 years really, behind in another week, and stepping into the unknown. It's a little bit like a dilemma. And I want to benefit beings. I want to respond to the cries of the world. And it's not completely clear how to do that. Sometimes you might feel stuck hanging from this branch by our teeth. It's a kind of frightening image to be hanging from this branch with our hands and feet tied. There's no way to get a hold. The only way we're holding on to this stuck situation is by not opening our mouth. But the problem of not opening our mouth is that the sincere questioner below the tree is waiting for our compassion response. one example of such a dilemma might be, we're hanging from this branch, we feel kind of stuck, and this stuckness that we're in may feel like worry. Maybe we feel responsible to worry about the world and the suffering beings of this world. We worry about birth and death, our own and our loved ones. And we might feel like there's nothing we can do except hang on here with our teeth and worry. And I'd say sometimes we might feel responsible to worry because we feel like if I'm not worried, then I'm neglecting suffering beings. I'm not caring for suffering beings if I'm not worrying. I sometimes have felt that way. Almost like an obligation to worry. We know it really doesn't help, but we feel like it's the least I can do. If I don't worry, then I'm afraid I might not be concerned. So we worry, but of course worry doesn't really do anything. We might pace the halls up and down. We might lose sleep. We might make ourselves sick from worrying about the future, future destiny of suffering beings, including ourselves. So that might be one pole of the dilemma, and the other option. Might feel like might be not caring, but another option could be compassion. And I think we often confuse worry and compassion. Worry might even be a little bit like empathy for others suffering, in the sense that we feel others suffering. I think that is part of, if we're worried about others, we do feel their suffering. But compassion, as I understand it in the Buddhist sense, is empathetically feeling the pain of others, but also wishing that they be free from the suffering, and wanting to help, wanting to be of some benefit. So I think it's a fine distinction that's worthy of investigating, this distinction between worry about others suffering and compassion for others suffering. And I think it's useful to discern the difference, because I think worry in and of itself actually never really helps. In fact, it tends to harm ourselves and others. It can make us sick. It can make others sick. We might say, well, maybe worry becomes the fuel for our helping, but I don't know if we need to worry in order to help or respond compassionately. Whereas compassion also feels the pain of others, but only because it will help us to respond and act or at least wish to do something to help. But especially to actually do something. And that's, I think, this dilemma. And if hanging from the branch by our teeth might be the stuck place of worrying about others suffering, then opening our mouth to respond might be compassion. A little different than worry. And it's letting go of our kind of stuck situation. It's responding. But in this strange dilemma that Xianyan poses, if we open our mouth to to compassion and we respond, we lose our life. We lose our life as we knew it. We lose our life of hanging from the branch. It's kind of stuck, but it's familiar, and it's not really going anywhere. We can't really resolve the situation by hanging out with our teeth like that. But sometimes it's hard to open our mouth because it's familiar to be hanging by our teeth in such a way. A compassionate response can be anything. Maybe sometimes we hold on by our teeth like that because we're afraid of responding wrongly in a way that will harm others. Maybe it's safer to hang on the worry branch than to step into a new response. Maybe that's part of what losing our life means, is losing our life as we knew it, the life of hanging from the branch. Are we willing to let go and fall and maybe make a mistake, maybe get hurt on the way down to the ground? But maybe find yourself in a new situation, hopefully a beneficial one. So Dogen Zenji comments on this story of Xian Yan and Shobo Genzo, commenting on the opening line, "You are up in a tall tree." Dogen says, helping us to practice with the story, regarding the fact that you are up in a tall tree. Dogen says, well, what is you? It's a good question. It's a good way to start the investigation. You and I are up in a tall tree. What is this you? What is this I that's up in a tree? It's starting right off by turning the light around. Often when we're hanging from the branch by our teeth, we're actually trying to figure out how the tree works, what's going on with the person beneath the tree who's asking the question, and how our teeth are doing, and all such things. But to start by really asking, what is this you that feels stuck hanging from the branch by our teeth? What is you? We study itself. And so that's one point that Dogen makes that might be enough right there, but Dogen mentions some other points too in his essay called The Meaning of Bodhidharma's Coming from the West. So the second point Dogen mentions is, know that you actually climbed up the tree. Sometimes we find ourselves hanging there by our teeth, and we think that like somebody put us there. We don't even remember how we got into this dilemma, but here we are hanging by our teeth. Dogen says, remember the time that you actually climbed up the tree. Nobody actually put us up there. We climbed up there, but we forget that. So I think this is good to, you might say, take responsibility for being in such a dilemma. And not blame others for it. I think that's part of what is this you that's up in a tree. And also this question, remember the time that you actually climbed up this view. Kind of think back to how that was, that you got into this dilemma. So I think that's worth looking at. Each of us is in our own dilemma in a way. There's lots of shared similarities between our dilemmas as humans in this particular time and place. But each one of us experiences our unique dilemma uniquely. So our third question, our third point that Dogen points us to about this story is, he says, the height of this tree, this tall tree that we're hanging from, we might think that the taller the tree is, the more dangerous it is to open our mouth and fall. In other words, if we're hanging from the branch by our teeth, but our feet are only 3 inches above the ground, it's not that big a deal to open our mouth. But the implication is it's a tall tree. And so Dogen says, the height of the tree is the size of the ancient mirror. This may be helpful to remember as we're examining our situation here. This frighteningly tall tree, we don't even know exactly how tall it is, but it feels tall. It feels like the ground is a long way down. But Dogen says in his style that only Dogen can say, the height of the tree is the size of an ancient mirror. We might say the height of the tree is the diameter of the ancient perfect round mirror. I find that that comment greatly relieving, especially at times I might feel like this tree is really tall and it's a long way down. The height of the tree is the size of the ancient mirror. The ancient mirror, the eternal mirror, is our own ungraspable true nature. Not the person we think ourselves to be, but boundless awareness whose diameter is, of course, infinity. And this tree that we find ourselves in is a reflection on the surface of the ancient mirror. It's not like it actually has its own height in inches, feet, yards, yojanas. All the qualities of our each of our unique dilemma. The dilemma here is represented by the tree, the tall tree. These qualities of our unique dilemma are our reflections on the surface of this mirror. They're held by the ancient mirror. They're embraced by the ancient mirror. They're taken care of lovingly by the ancient mirror. The circumstances are always okay. The dangerous situation of hanging from a tall tree exactly fills the surface of the ancient mirror. That's another point of Dogen's. Dogen makes more and more points about this story, but I'll just mention one more. But I find it particularly helpful, as Dogen says, when we respond to another, responding to another is opening the mouth in the mouth. Responding to another is opening the mouth in the mouth. We might feel like, I, this person, have to do something. I have to open my mouth now. How can I decide exactly when to open the mouth to respond appropriately and most compassionately? How can little me, in this incredibly difficult dilemma, this challenging situation, how can I decide when to open this mouth? Dogen says, responding to another is opening the mouth in the mouth. And the way I would understand it is, we're opening our little human intentional mouth within the big open space of Buddha's mouth. Therefore, it's we don't have to worry so much about deciding exactly when to open it or how to open it, because responding to another is opening the mouth within the mouth. And part of this bigger mouth that we're opening our mouth within is the inclusion of the other, all others. It's the big Buddha mouth. And so we don't decide on our own. We can't decide anything on our own, really. Yeah. There's just response happens, letting go happens, falling and losing our life happens out of great compassion with the aid of Buddha's big mouth. So there's some thoughts about dilemmas we might find ourselves in, and some Zen expressions about responding to the cries of the world, which may be our own or others. If you'd like to unmute your mic and make a comment or ask a question, you're most welcome to open your mouth. I can't quite see everybody at the same time, so I think you could just jump in if you have something you'd like to express or ask. I also might ask you, in case you don't ask me anything, I might ask you, if you feel like you might be in a dilemma, or a dilemma comes to mind where you feel like, maybe stuck and not, knowing how to respond.
I was going to say that, putting the tree in the context of the mirror, then it seems like it, the whole sense of you is completely relieved of the fear of dying, or, you know, because it's, because the you is empty of any substantive, you know, permanent qualities. Yeah. That you, yes, you that's hanging on, you know, thinking that there's this dilemma, and that the losing your life seems to be pointing towards losing this limited view of yourself.
Yes.
Of what the self is. But I wouldn't have thought of that without you bringing in the thing about the mirror and the tree. Because at first I was kind of like, well, why doesn't the person at the bottom, maybe their lesson is to get out of their own suffering enough to see that you're stuck in this tree holding on by your teeth, assuming that you're going to die if you open your mouth. I guess that was my first, like, why is the person at the bottom not, like, noticing this other person's dilemma?
That's often how it is, though, I think, is that people want us to do something for them, and they often don't see our dilemma. if the questioner, or just, you know, the cries of the world are calling out to each of us and to everyone as a whole too. So it's a kind of confusing situation. And I think when we're crying out, we're often not thinking that the other we're crying out to has their own problems too. So I think that's a good point to remember. But if the person at the bottom were to really notice this situation, they might even say, it is really important for me to know the meaning of Bodhidharma is coming from the West. But if you answer, I will catch you at the bottom of the tree. They haven't thought that far ahead yet, I think.
So yes, that's what I was thinking, was like, maybe their own suffering would be relieved in the moment of realizing they needed to have compassion for the person in the tree. Anyway.
Yeah. But I think the way the story is posed is, maybe we could see it like that actually the one who seems to be the suffering being at the bottom of the tree asking for our help is actually truly the Bodhisattva helping us to let go of our life. And it looks like they're asking for our help, but maybe really it's that they're helping us let go of our life. And maybe it's always this way, really. It's mutual benefit when we express ourselves and put forth a request. It helps both people have the opportunity to remember. The one in the tree can remember that the height of the tree is the size of the ancient mirror. And just like you said beautifully, when we remember that the situation that we're in, including ourselves, our body up in the tree and the tree, is all exactly the size of that ancient mirror. And that the ancient mirror actually doesn't die. As you mentioned, that's the key point. And, you know, sometimes I feel like I talk about this deathless thing. Maybe too much sometimes, I feel like, because if it's not really open to fully, it sounds too easy or something. Well, nothing really dies. Of course, it's a big thing for a human life to be born, and it's a big thing for a human life to end. But I personally vow to devote my life to the ancient mirror for the benefit of this person, Tokyo, and for the benefit of all of you and everybody else. I really feel that, especially when we're really up against birth and death, our own and others, trusting and taking refuge in the ancient mirror is, well, it's what I trust the most. I trust that there is a reality that does not die. And then from the point of view of the person asking the question at the bottom, you could say, the height of their body there asking the question is also the size of the ancient mirror. Yes, Rosie. Can you unmute your mic? Should be an mute button up at the top.
Okay. Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
I really could feel all your compassion coming through, especially when you said, I have to write it down. Our reflections are lovingly being taken care of by the ancient mirror. And that just went right in. I mean, I was, really responded. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I would even go so far as to say that this ancient mirror has many names, of course. Maybe each Shogo Genzo chapter title is a different name of the ancient mirror. But one that's actually not a chapter title in the Shogo Genzo is love. I think love is the name of the ancient mirror. Yeah. Big love. The love that is our unity.
Yes.
Not so much the emotion of love, although that maybe comes from the actual reality of love. Mm-hmm. Love is like our shared being, our shared reality. So, and the size of this love is the height of the tree.
Yes.
The height of the tree is the size of love. Thank you.
Yes, and this is your name, Luminous Mirror Wisdom. Thank you, Luminous Mirror Owl.
You're welcome. So if anyone else wants to jump in, again, I can't see hands.
I'll say something. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So I'm glad to hear this perspective. Sometimes I felt a little sad to see like the hoarding that's going on and just this kind of seems short-sighted lack of feeling that we're still a community, even though we have to be separate. So understanding that humanity goes deeper than what's on the surface in a way.
Yes, that's very true. And also, as Dogen says, we start the investigation with, what is this you that is disappointed with hoarding in society, which I understand, and then
right.
who is this one that's disappointed with the hoarding, and that becomes your dilemma, my dilemma. I'm the one hanging from the branch, and the one under the tree is actually gathering up all of the toilet paper from all the stores all around me. Gathering the pile under the tree. And I'm up in the tree hanging from a branch. Now it's my dilemma. right? How do I lose my life to help myself and hoarders?
Yeah.
I think it's a great question. It's not immediately apparent. I don't know if it would be helpful to say, do you really need that much toilet paper? There's plenty to go around. It might say, but I don't know if that would be so helpful. I think often that would probably not be so helpful. It might be helpful at such a time to, let go a grip of the teeth on the branch and drop to the bottom and immediately hand that person a roll of toilet paper. We'd lose our life totally, and we'd also lose our own toilet paper. We'd have to maybe find some substitute, but it might be just the compassionate response that would awaken a distracted hoarder from their habit. But who knows? Who knows? We're all hanging from our own branch.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I guess that gives hope.
I think that my main point is being that it's your unique dilemma to wonder about hoarders. The hoarder has their own dilemma of thinking that they need some extra toilet paper just in case. So they're hanging, it's kind of the unique thing, we're each hanging from our own branch, but we're all, maybe we could say we're each hanging from our own branch, but all the branches are on the same tree. We feel like we're kind of looking around at the other people hanging from their branches with their, and now we're all on the same tree. And maybe if one of us lets go of our life over on this branch, takes the tree a little bit. So somebody who is just about to release their grip over on the other side of the tree is shaken loose despite themselves. It's very dynamic situation, and we usually don't have time to stop and figure it out. And it's actually so painful. I mean, I've never tried this myself, and I don't recommend trying at home, hanging from a branch by your teeth, but you might really have to have some dental work done after such a situation. It sounds very painful, especially the longer we hang there. So the quicker we can lose our life, better for us and the dentist. I don't know what I'm going to do in such a situation next. All I know is that I'm speaking with you now, and it feels like barely found my way onto the screen here. I have some, very tentative plans, but they're very shaky. It's nice to have kind of shaky tentative plans because I know not to count on any of it too much.
Tokyo.
Okay, yes, hi.
I appreciated the discussion on compassion at the beginning of the talk, and it's been my experience that the minute that I can move myself out of the center of the picture a little bit, like right now, I'm way up in the corner in my screen. As soon as I can sort of recognize that, oh, there's another suffering being. I wonder how she would get out of this dilemma. The minute that in this dilemma, it's not just so much about me. It seems like the whole universe then has expanded, and sometimes there's other options appear before me. So that's where I went when you started talking about compassion. Is just, oh, it's not just this one egocentric person in the dilemma anymore. It's actually all beings. And
all beings hanging on branches of the same tree. But I really feel like this story, this Zen story of Xuan Yan's up in a tree, is a Zen story about compassion. Mm-hmm. I was actually looking for a Zen story about compassion, which is, in all thousands of Zen stories, it's not so obvious that many of them are specifically about compassion. We're in an interesting tradition that Mahayana Buddhism is so much about compassion. But if you look at the classic Zen stories, I think it's there, but it's in a kind of hidden form. But this story, I feel like, is completely about compassion. I feel like that's what it's demonstrating, because there's this person asking for our response. And that's, I think, what compassion is always, my understanding of compassion is it's a response to the need of another, it's a response to the need of another. And that's the setup of the story. And it's asking how we do it. And it's also showing how hard it is to be compassionate, because, it's comfortable staying on our hanging on this branch because it's familiar. So, but the compassion that's being called for here is it's dangerous. I think sometimes compassion in response is not so dangerous, right? It's just, how may I help you? It's very simple and easy. This story makes it sound like compassion at the top of the tree is very dangerous. But maybe what it's actually pointing to is that even just simple, kind and compassionate responses often feel more difficult than they actually are, because it's letting go of our life in the moment. It's letting go of the direction we were going. We're walking down the street in a certain direction and somebody calls from behind us and says, "Excuse me." It's a little bit like we have to stop going in the direction we were going and turn around. I feel like this story is pointing that part out. It seems kind of dramatic to lose our life and fall to the bottom, but maybe it's a dramatic way of saying that any compassionate response is a little bit of like letting go of ourself, like you said, Patrick, our separate ego self. That's all compassion is, really. I think it's just letting go of that in one way or another. And it's, even when it's just a small response is being called for, it still often feels very difficult, because we're used to hanging there for so long. So I do think that this up in a tree story is a Zen compassion story, although it might not seem obviously such. maybe we should call it an ancient mirror. and enjoy the rest of the evening and take good care of our teeth and be ready for anything. And it's I'm sorry to not be able to see you all in person. This is pretty good. Next best is to see your faces all together here on the ancient mirror screen. And though it's the last talk, I'll attend some screen zazen a little bit more this week, and then Sho and I are having a departing ceremony party on not this Sunday but the following one. So we'll anyone like to chant the Sangha Nimocana Sutra for a few hours with us, you're welcome to join in and say some final goodbyes or take off the next day and fall from the tall tree and hopefully lose our lives. And in the meantime, please take good care of yourselves and enjoy the precious, sweet fragrance of impermanence. May our intention equally extend to every being and place with the true merit of Buddha's way. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha's way is unsurpassable. I vow to become me.